Prayena meanly. Munayaha, all sages. Rajan, O king. Nivrittaha, above. Vidhi, regulative principles. Shedhataha, from restrictions. Nargunya, staha, transcendentally situated. Ramante, take pleasure in. Sma, distinctly. Guna anukatane, describing the glories. Arehe, of the Lord. O King Prikshit, mainly the topmost transcendentalists who are above the regulative principles and restrictions, take pleasure in describing the glories of the Lord. Purport. The topmost transcendentalist is a liberated soul and is therefore not within the purview of the regulative principles. A neophyte who is intended to be promoted to the spiritual plane is guided by the spiritual master under regulative principles. He may be compared to a patient who is treated by various restrictions under medical jurisdiction. Om Jnanatim Nirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Tathati Shapadantikam Mandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrashatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shavadhutam Pradijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lodita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hori Priye Vansha Kolpitarubhyascha Kupa Sindho Vyayevacha Pratitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama. I know. Yeah. Prayena muniyo rajan nivritta vidhi shedataha nargunyastha ramante sma gunanu katane harehe. So, nirgunyastha, those who are transcendentally situated, are beyond the regulative principles. That's mentioned in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Shruti vipratipanna te yadas thasyati nishchala samadhav achala buddhis tada yogam avapshasi yada te moha kalilam buddhir vyatitarishyati tada gantasi nirvedam shrotavyasya shrutasi. Person who's perfected is beyond rules and regulations because he's perfected, just as a medical patient. When he's healthy, he doesn't have to follow all those protocols that the that one has to follow when diseased. So there are two kinds of persons on the transcendental path, those who are perfected and those who are neophytes. But those who are neophytes require to strictly follow the regulative principles given by the bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, they'll be in difficulty. But even those who are perfected generally also follow the regulative principles, just to set the example for the neophytes. Srila Sanatan Goswami was the most advanced, but it's said that his sadhana, his following of the rules and regulations, was like a line drawn in stone. It's so strict. Sankhya Purvaka Namagananati, they would chant their prescribed number of rounds, of course self-prescribed, but they had some vow to chant some number of rounds and they would strictly do that. They were doing everything just to set the example. Now, generally, even the perfected devotees follow the regulative principles, but they're not obliged to. They're beyond that. Generally, liberated souls also take pleasure in describing the transcendental activities. As mentioned above, since Narayan, Hari, the personality of Godhead, is beyond the material creation, his form and attributes are not material. The topmost transcendentalists, or the liberated souls, realize him by advanced experience of transcendental knowledge. And therefore they take pleasure in the discussion of the transcendental qualities of the Lord's pastimes. In the Bhagavad Gita 4:9, the personality of Godhead declares that his appearance and activities are all divyam, or transcendental. The common man who is under the spell of material energy takes it for granted that the Lord is like one of us, and therefore he refuses to accept the transcendental nature of the Lord's form, name, etc. The topmost transcendentalist is not interested in anything material and is taking interest in the matter of the Lord's activities is definite proof that the Lord is not like one of us in the material world. In the Vedic literatures also, it is confirmed that the Supreme Lord is one, but that he is engaged in his transcendental pastimes in the company of his unalloyed devotees, and that simultaneously he is present as the Supersoul, an expansion of Baldev in the heart of all living entities. Therefore, the highest perfection in transcendental realization is to take pleasure in hearing and describing the transcendental qualities of the Lord and not in merging into his impersonal Brahma existence for which the impersonalist monist aspires. The real transcendental pleasure is realized in the glorification of the transcendental Lord and not in the feeling of being situated in his impersonal feature. But there are also others who are not the topmost transcendentalists, but are in a lower status, and who do not take pleasure in describing the transcendental activities of the Lord. Rather, they discuss such activities of the Lord formally with the aim of merging into his existence. So, prayena, mainly the advanced transcendentalists take pleasure in the glorification of the Lord. But there are some others who are not as advanced who don't do that. Prayena munio rajan nivritta vidhi shevita nargunyasta ramantesma. Nargunya means transcendental. Specifically, it means beyond the three gunas, three qualities of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. In the material world, where we take pleasure in the qualities born of material nature, samsparsha job, bhoga. What is that? Yes. Yeah, I'm thinking of something else. Anyway, prakriti jaya gunai. We're enjoying something produced by the three modes of material nature. Someone enjoys food in goodness, someone enjoys food in passion, someone enjoys food that's in the mode of ignorance, someone enjoys literature that's advanced in material analysis and philosophy. Someone takes pleasure in passionate novels. Someone takes pleasure in gross degradation. So there are all kinds of different tastes born of the three modes of material nature, and everyone's enjoying some combination. Therefore, there's like those who are reading The New Yorker, and there are those who are reading Playboy, and there are those, all different kinds of literature according to different tastes. And it's all coming from the three modes of nature. Or our activities, our enjoyment directly is in connection with these three modes. But the transcendentalists are nirguna. They're beyond the three modes of material nature. Nirgunyastha. They're beyond the sagunan samatichata. Pramabhuyaya kalpati. They're on the Brahma platform, spiritual platform. Brahma means spirit. So they're on the spiritual platform. When you're on the spiritual platform, you don't take pleasure in slumming in the material qualities, the three qualities of material nature. So these transcendentalists are nirgunya, but ramante guna katune, gunanu katune pare. But they take pleasure in guna anukatana. Guna anukatana means describing the gunas, the qualities of Krishna. The material world, there's qualities, the quality of ignorance, the quality of passion, the quality of goodness. And Krishna also has qualities. He has name, form, qualities, activities, everything. He's not disqualified or lacking qualities. He has qualities. Achincha guna swarupa. They're described in Brahma Sanghita as inconceivable transcendental qualities. Because they're inconceivable, when the materialists hear about them, they think that they're, again, another addition of the material qualities. Krishna has a form, it must be like our material form. If Krishna has a name, it must be like our name, limited. If Krishna has activities, they must be like our activities. They judge everything by extension of their own material experience. And they think that Krishna's on that qualities. Standard. But in the Bhagavad Gita, janma karma cha me divyam. My birth, my activities are all transcendental. They're beyond the jurisdiction of the three qualities of material nature. And therefore, the transcendentalists who are on the topmost platform, they like to hear about Krishna. They don't want to hear about ordinary material life. They're not interested in hearing about anything located in the modes of material nature. They're beyond that. That's what they've worked so hard to get free from. But those same transcendentalists enjoy talking about Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami is a standard example. He was so transcendentally situated that as soon as he was born, he just left home. I'm not going to get entangled in material life. He just left home. And he was didn't even worry about, you know, getting initiated, getting a sacred thread, or even getting clothes. He just took off. His father was after him. Where are you going? Where are you going? My son, my son. He just went. While he was walking, he went past some women who were bathing in the local pond. And they didn't even bother putting their clothes on. Because they took a look at him, and they could see by his face that he's completely innocent. He's not interested in any material enjoyment. Just like a child. You know, ladies don't worry about whether their clothes are on or off when there's a little child there. So they looked at Sukadeva Goswami. They understood at once by his face. He's like a child. It doesn't matter. Then his father was chasing after him. When the father came, then they quickly put on their clothes. Because although he was a great sage, still, he was a householder and he knew what was what, materially speaking. So they saw he makes distinctions, male and female. His son doesn't know the difference. So that Prabhupada cited that one devotee, Shyam Sundar, his daughter asked him, that Daddy, when you were little, were you a boy or a girl? No, children don't make those kind of distinctions. So they saw Sukadeva Goswami was like that. That means he has no interest in material distinctions. We make material distinctions in order to enjoy. I want that food. I don't want this food. We distinguish. But Sukadeva Goswami had no interest in distinguishing what is what materially. He was nirgunyasta, beyond material qualities. And yet, we find that he's speaking extensively about the qualities of Krishna. In this whole Srimad Bhagavatam, the qualities of Krishna, the activities of Krishna. Because these are all transcendental. He was a strict brahmachari, nothing to do with women. And yet he's describing the rasa dance, which appears to be like dealings between young boy and young girls. So, appears to be means it's not. It's something else entirely. Kaviraj Goswami gives the example that it's like iron and gold. Iron is metal and gold is metal. But if we think that iron and gold are the same, no. Iron you get at cheap price, anything. And gold is very valuable. If you give your girlfriend an iron bracelet, it's not the same. It's not the same. So, gunanu katane pade. The same transcendentalists who wouldn't waste any time or wouldn't want to be degrade themselves by talking about material topics, material qualities, material activities. Those same transcendentally situated persons take pleasure in discussing Krishna. Anukatane means that they're describing. Anu means always, constantly describing, or anu means by following the parampara system. They're just not imagining. Let's make up another nice story about Krishna. But itishu shumadhiranam yenastad vichichakshri. What they've heard from the authorities, what they've heard through the guru parampara, the disciplic succession, that's what they're describing. So it's transcendental reality, not something imagined. Gunanukatane hade. A similar verse comes later, Atmaram Ashtramuniya, very famous verse. The meaning is practically the same, that the transcendentally situated persons of the highest accomplishment enjoy describing the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Although they're self-satisfied, they have no interest in material satisfaction because they're satisfied within. Still, they describe the transcendental qualities of Krishna with great pleasure. There's one expression here by Prabhupada that is very nice. The liberated souls realize him by advanced experience of transcendental knowledge, and therefore they take pleasure in describing his qualities and pastimes. It's not simply, it's not superficial, it's not just book reading, but by advanced transcendental experience of knowledge, they're describing these things. It means they have realization. Vigyan. Vigyan means, means realized knowledge. Yes, realized knowledge. So from their transcendental realized knowledge, they describe the same thing that they've heard from the previous authorities, but they've understood it by applied devotional service or by advanced realization. And the Mayavadis miss out on all of this. They think that this is all another version of Maya, that the Lord's form, that Brahma, Saguna Brahma, Brahma with qualities, that's kind of a lower stage. That's their misunderstanding. They don't know the Param Bhava Majananto Mamabhuta Maheshwara. They don't understand the transcendental nature of Krishna. And therefore, even if they describe the glories of the Lord, it's not with the same relish. This is sadhana also. We recite these things so that we can merge with the Supreme. But they can't relish it because they ultimately think it's Maya. We're talking about all of this, but it's just something we do, and so that we can go beyond it. So they can't get the same unlimited transcendental pleasure that the devotees enjoy by constant engagement in the service of the Lord. All right. Are there some questions or comments?
As aspiring devotees, we've been devotees for a certain amount of time, a year, a few, 5, 10 years, and then we start to feel that we actually really like Krishna consciousness, and we're relishing hearing the pastimes, following the regulative principles, chanting Hare Krishna. Can we start thinking, I'm beyond the regulative principles now, and I don't really
necessarily... You can start thinking that, but then you'll be in trouble.
But if it says that if one takes pleasure, and he's feeling transcendental happiness, then
That because he's feeling some happiness, he's beyond the regulative principles. Those who are beyond the regulative principles feel transcendental happiness. It's not that everyone who feels a little glimpse of transcendental happiness. Just like a person who's healthy, he feels like eating, he feels like walking, but it doesn't mean as soon as I feel like eating, I'm healthy. As soon as I feel like walking, I'm healthy. It may be a good sign of some appetite is there, well, that's good. Sign that maybe you're recovering your health. But it's not that as soon as you get a little feeling to eat again, all right, now we discharge you. You're healthy, certified. So it's a good sign. We feel some transcendental happiness. We feel some pleasure in chanting Hare Krishna or chanting the glories of the Lord. That doesn't mean, okay, now I'm the topmost transcendentalist.
How will we know when we're on that level?
How will you know? Those who are advanced never know that. They never think, I'm on the top, I'm the topmost transcendentalist. If you know that you're the topmost transcendentalist, you're probably in trouble. Sanatana Goswami was the topmost transcendentalist, but he thought that I'm a fool. I don't understand this science. Kaviraj Goswami is the topmost transcendentalist. He thought, I'm lower than the worm in the stool. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the topmost transcendentalist. He thought, I'm lusty, I'm greedy, I take pleasure in bad-mouthing others. I have no taste for the holy name of Krishna. That's how the advanced transcendentalists think.
But just a comment, like, I feel that Prabhupada always acknowledged, like, even though, like, he was very humble, but he acknowledged, like, his position. Like, I heard in a lecture that, like, one time, like, devotees, like, he said, like, you can't do it alone, like, being, he said, both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and I could do it alone, something like that, he said, but it's not possible to, like, stay alone and still. So he said he emphasized devotional service, so he acknowledged his position. And also heard one more thing, that usually, like, we don't worship anyone in front of Krishna. Like, even we, for Tulsi worship.
It's not that Prabhupada, like, took the position that I'm the topmost transcendentalist, I'm the most realized, but I'm serving as spiritual master. So, because I have this service, I have to accept some worship. I have to accept a big seat. I have to have my name on the card, Founder Acharya. But not that because I'm the greatest devotee. Prabhupada didn't present, I'm the greatest person, I'm the most. Just to tell you one story, Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, and this was just in the days when Los Angeles was getting started, and they bought that church, and they were sort of setting things up, and the movement was starting to grow. Devotees were coming. It was really moving. And someone had given Prabhupada, maybe you've seen in something, a big long brown coat, tan coat with peacock feather tassels. And someone had given Prabhupada a gold lame bead bag, and, you know, people were giving. Prabhupada was sitting on his bed in his room in Los Angeles. He said, now we are getting so many things, so I'm just praying to Krishna that I may not fall down. Not that, yes, I'm getting so many things because I'm the greatest devotee. I'm perfect. Prabhupada said no, that he was asked that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying, you know, I'm lusty, I'm greedy, and Narottam Das Thakur is saying, I have no taste for the holy name. Prabhupada said the devotee actually feels that. It's not a show. That I just pretend, you know, for the benefit of others, I pretend to be dependent on Krishna. I pretend that I feel that I'm fallen. He actually feels that.
Yeah, I understand that he actually feels that, but also for our benefit, for us to know how we should be. But like the pure devotee, he's never under the laws of material energy, so there would be
that.
No chance.
But he doesn't
of him falling
feel
down.
That I'm beyond the laws of material nature. Maya can never get me. I'm perfect. I'm the greatest devotee. The others may feel that way, but he doesn't feel that way. He feels that I'm unqualified. That's the sign of an advanced devotee. Sanatana Goswami was going to the Jagannath temple by avoiding the front gate, the lion gate, and going the back way over the beach, even though it meant going over the hot sand, which in Puri in the summer is serious business. But why was he doing that? So that he wouldn't come in touch with the pujaris and contaminate them. So he was actually thinking that way. But I was born in a high family, but I was compromised by material service, and I'm the wrong person to associate with the pujaris. I'll just contaminate them. He was thinking that way. Haridas Thakur also was thinking that way. All the devotees, practically, they don't think, I'm the greatest. They think, I'm the lowest.
Maharaj, in this regard, is this like one of the understanding that what feels like rules and regulation for everyone is actually a way of life for topmost transcendentalists?
Yeah, that's also there. The transcendentalist also, he may sometimes relax the rules and regulations, but then he may follow for the benefit of others. That may be there. But apart from that, they enjoy. You know, we sit down for a Bhagavatam class. Well, I better go to Bhagavatam class because the spiritual master said that you have to attend the class, so I better go to the class and sit through it. You know, for 45 minutes they're going to talk about whatever it is, and I have to sit there. But the advanced devotee relishes. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasama. He wants to drink it up. Bhagavatam. He's enjoying the same. That's the sign of the advanced devotee. Prabhupada gave that example, the green mango and the ripe mango. It's the same mango, but when it's ripe, then you relish it. So the same devotional service. The neophyte is performing devotional service. The advanced devotee is performing devotional service. The neophyte is hearing Bhagavatam. The advanced devotee is hearing Bhagavatam. But the advanced devotee is relishing. And the neophyte devotee is falling asleep. Okay. 16 rounds. We think, oh. The advanced devotee is relishing. Rupa Goswami said, I have only one mouth and two ears. How can I chant? If I had thousands of tongues and thousands of ears, then I could relish the chanting of the holy name. He's getting so much pleasure in chanting.
Sometimes we meet some devotees who are influenced by Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and they say, like from different not ISKCON, and sometimes they say, oh, chanting is the first step, and it's like this, say that it is a step, and then
to what?
To the higher realms of spiritual, our spiritual, what is a sarup?
What do they do when they're in the advanced stage?
They say we know our sarup and stuff.
What do you just do? Sit there and know your sarup?
This is my confusion. So my question is, chanting is the process and the means and the end also. So in the spiritual world, so we like chanting is like we keep glorifying Krishna.
Yashoda Maya is chanting the glories of Krishna. The gopis are chanting the glories of Krishna. Coward boys are chanting the glories of Krishna. They don't say, well, now I know my sroop. No need to chant anything. That's a nonsense idea. Or sometimes, you know, or they go the other way. We just chant. You know, we don't do any of this karma, kanda stuff like distributing literature or preaching or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. Because that's karma, kanda. That's just work. You know, for the neophyte devotee, work is all right. For the advanced devotee, we just sit and chant. Because you guys can't sit and chant or read Bhagavatam all day, so there's work. But that work is... Prabhupada commented on that in his Bhagavatam. He said, they see that we're going to the paper merchants, they see that we're going to the printing press, and they think that we've adopted business, that we're engaged in business in the under the guise of the renounced order, that we've adopted the dress of the renounced order, but we're still just doing business. But they don't understand that this is the Lord's service, this is Krishna's service, not material activity. Yes. One time, Gurudas, my godbrother, was one of the first devotees to go to Vrindavan. So he was going there with Srila Prabhupada in the car. First time he's going to Vrindavan, Gurudas. And he's going with Srila Prabhupada himself. And he's driving. And Prabhupada's not saying anything. And Gurudas is thinking, you know, what is Prabhupada thinking about? And he's on his way to Vrindavan. What is Prabhupada thinking about? And what might he talk about? Prabhupada didn't say anything. Then finally Prabhupada said, cement. We require cement. And then started talking about construction and so on. So, you know, he's thinking that, Gurudas is thinking that Prabhupada's just thinking about Krishna's qualities and some lila or something. And Prabhupada's thinking about devotional service to Krishna. We require cement. That's not ordinary, you know, it doesn't mean that Prabhupada was like a mason, you know, a contractor, a builder. He's thinking about glorifying Krishna.
Sometimes people who look at pure devotees as above the regulative principles deduce that they must therefore be perfect materially. And everything they say, whether it's spiritual or material, is absolute. What is your view on that?
Well, I mentioned that in the class the other day, how I raised that question with Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes we see that the spiritual master makes mistakes. We see that from the material point of view. And Prabhupada said, yes, that's the material point of view. And Prabhupada said, the spiritual master is not a magician. We have to see how he's engaged in Krishna service.
So we describe Lord's activities are transcendental, and Lord's activities are transcendental, and the devotees at the higher stage, they relish enjoying Krishna's pastime. So how do we clearly, to another materialistic person who is engaged in talking about materialistic topic, and they seem to be very happy and gross in that. So how do we distinguish between these two places?
How happy are they? You know, they put their dollar or whatever it is in the slot, and they get a pickup in New York Times, and they read it from, you know, cover to cover. And afterwards, are they, transcendentally blissful? And they pick up the Gainesville Sun, and then, I feel so satisfied. Let me read it again.
What about scientists who is like working in his research, a scientist?
He's reading the books again and again because they're so blissful.
He's discovering new and new.
Yeah, phenomena. He's getting some pleasure. That's a fact. But that pleasure is temporary. That pleasure is temporary. He gets some pleasure. Now I've found it. So then, all right, now I found it. But still he's not satisfied. Not that he's full in himself. Still they're chasing it, you know, typical. They're engaged in their scientific pursuit, but still they're drinking, they're smoking, they're woman hunting. Why? Because if they're fully satisfied with the pleasure of science, why are they drinking? Why are they woman hunting? Even they'll take some rare scientist who's, you know, doesn't care about women, doesn't care about whiskey, doesn't care about anything. All he cares about is equations and differential equations and this and that and the other thing. But how long will that enjoyment last? How long will that enjoyment last?
A few years.
A few years. Then his body is finished, and then he has to go to the next body. And then he can't do anything. Suppose he takes birth as a dog, then no more equations, just woof, woof, woof.
In this regard, like, because Krishna says that whatever one thinks about, he becomes in, like, he attains to that in his next life. So what of, like, scientists who is trying to, like, be away from, like, I mean, like, he's not engaging in illicit activities, but he's, like, I don't know about Albert Einstein, but something like him. Like, he's into his research fully. So what does he attain in his next life? He'll become a scientist again, because he has developed that kind of propensity in this life.
So he may become a scientist. He may become a pig. Pig is also, you know, searching for something, searching for something. And the scientist is saying, let me get to the bottom of this. And the pig is also saying, let me get to the bottom of this.
It's not the same thing. Like, everyone is in searching. Even the birds are searching, bees are searching, they're also searching. But what he's searching is not the same thing as the pig. So,
each case is different, of course. But he's searching. You know, how to make a new way to a new kind of explosive. You know, the dog is scratching with his claws, and the scientist is trying to find a new way to scratch. That means he's an advanced, he wants to be a more advanced dog. Well, that may be. Or he's trying to do something good. But, so he may come back as a scientist, or by his search for knowledge, he may come back, you know, again as some sort of researcher, this or that. But that's a failure. If he keeps coming back again and again and again and going back to university and back to university and back to university and back to university and university and again and again, that, what is that? That's failure. Again, sit behind a telescope. Again, sit behind a microscope. Again, sit in front of an oscilloscope. That's not the business of human life. And apart from that, you know, apart from all the glories of, you know, the Isaac Newtons who are looking for the truth and everything, most scientists are engaged as lackeys. They're servants of someone. They work for a corporation, they work for the military. They work for, usually it's a corporation or the military. So there, somebody says, we need this. And he says, yes, sir. For the most part, great scientists are doing what their boss tells them, finally. That means Shudra. Shudras are the persons in the mode of ignorance. He's searching for knowledge. But his searching for knowledge is basically he's earning a living by... Maybe he started out, you know, as a student with the idea of, you know, pure research and, you know, finding out the truth of this and the truth of that. And he winds up working for, you know, some corporation. Winds up working for Bechtel or this one or that one. Doing something mischievous most of the time. Working for government contractors. Well, what is the glory of that? But even taking it that no, he's really doing pure research and so on. He's missing the point. He should be doing pure research into the real meaning of things. And sometimes scientists do that. They try to find out what is the origin of the universe? What is the cause of everything? Where does every, you know, those who are really high level scientists, you know, they're practically into metaphysics. That's really where they go. But they do it through scientific process. And because the scientific process is limited, they can't get to the point. Brahma tried to do that. He wound up in the beginning of the universe. He was sitting on this lotus in total darkness and didn't know why he was there, or where he was, who he was. But he was intelligent. So he thought that, I'm sitting on this lotus, and where does this lotus come from, and why am I in this lotus? And he thought the source of the lotus must be under the water. The lotus is coming up out of this water, vast ocean. The source must be under the water. So he dived down into the water, and he's going down, and he's going down, and he's going down, and he's going down, and he just couldn't get to the source of it. That's your scientist. Goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and it's always further down. So finally, Brahma, he was intelligent, he saw this is not working. He came back up, and as he was coming out of the water, he heard these two sounds, ta and pa. So he put the two together and figured there was a message there, ta pa. So he underwent austerity, and by the grace of Krishna, gradually Krishna revealed himself. But, so that's the real thing. When they come to the perfection of their quest for knowledge, Jnanavan Man Prapadite, they surrender to Krishna. Otherwise, he's missing the point. Mantra time?
I have a question. So we're talking about the origin, where everything comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So we say that everything comes from Krishna,
mm.
And others think that it comes from, like, void.
From void?
Yeah, what is this void, and how does that everything comes from this void?
You tell me, I can't figure it out. How everything comes from nothing.
Yes, I mean, you have the two transcendentalists. Those are legitimate people.
They're not even transcendentalists. Those who think that everything comes from nothing, that's not even transcendental. That's just another form of Maya. There are those who think that everything comes from the impersonal Brahma. They're transcendentalists. But again, from something which has no variety, how do you get variety? That question they can't answer. That's why they're not the topmost transcendentalists. Yes?
It's a little bit off topic, but this morning I was trying to think of the verse that is quoted before the 10 offenses. And so I think the meaning is something like, you know, after many, you can chant Hare Krishna for many, many births, but still not attain the love of Godhead. So I was trying to think of, it's the sincerity and the actual devotion. And so, trying to, we were talking about following the regulative principles. You know, you can follow them, but still not get there. Can you, like, I don't know, say something on that?
Yeah, sincerity means you do something. Sincerity means you do something. So, the thing that we're supposed to do is chant Hare Krishna some certain number of rounds every day and avoid the 10 offenses. It's an active process that just like driving means that you you put your foot on the accelerator and you turn the wheel and all of that. But it also means you stop at the red light, that you drive on the left, that you stop at the stop signs, that you don't go the wrong way on one-way streets. There are some regulative principles. Otherwise, if you don't follow the regulative principles, you're not going to get to your destination. You'll get, you know, flattened on some street corner because you didn't stop at the light. So if you're sincere, I really want to drive. Well, it's not enough just to put your foot on the gas and go. You're advised that that's nice that you want to drive. Now, you know, here are the traffic rules and try to follow them. And sometimes you may make a mistake because you're a new driver. But gradually, because you're trying to follow the rules, you'll become expert. But if you don't even try to follow, how are you going to become a driver? Like that. Anything else? Yes.
Earlier in the lecture, you were talking about how most knowledge or activities, say the food we eat, can be in the three modes of nature, and that just led me to think. And then you kind of touched upon a similar subject I was thinking about when you're answering a question about one who is striving for further knowledge, like they're scientists who will write or inquire about other books because they're in some way transcendentally interested in, like, what is the origin of all this? Although they may be going further and further down the lotus stem, they're still inquiring about different knowledge.
Yeah, so, the best scientists are inquiring about ultimate issues.
Right, right. They're not so mundane, like, you know, who's going to win the game today?
Right.
But
although lots of times they are, they're just interested in, you know, how do I get this grant money, or how do I get my name published on this paper, you know, at the expense of my grad student or whatever. How do I get the credit? A lot of that goes on. But the best scientists are actually looking for the ultimate origin of things, or the ultimate explanation of things.
Of course. So what that was leading me to think that where, as neophyte devotees, we many times don't have an attraction to read Bhagavatam every day and get the supreme knowledge, so we'll inquire about more or less material truths out there. Say, like, if we're in university, we're going to study these books that materialists are writing, and we study their perception of reality. But, you know, even if we're not in school, some of us may be pursuing a similar thing by, say, inquiring about current events and inquiring about a supreme truth in that material reality.
Yeah.
So what's your suggestion?
That's indirect.
Indirect.
That's the inquiry has been deflected. So the principle of inquiry is meant for the target, real target is Krishna. But instead of hitting the target, I'm going off target. So I'm inquiring about Krishna's material energy, which is also Krishna, but indirectly. There's nothing else that people can ask about but Krishna, because there's nothing outside Krishna.
Right.
So if I'm asking, you know, what's the price of beans, still I'm asking about Krishna. But indirectly, and connect through his material energy. And asking directly about Krishna, that's right on target. I'm going to Krishna himself. Or I'm going, if I'm asking what is the ultimate truth, then I'm going toward Krishna. Otherwise, if I'm just asking, you know, where's the best beer in town? So that's still asking about Krishna, but indirectly. Someone's in the mode of ignorance, so he's asking a question like that, you know? Where can you get a good beer around here? You know, question in the mode of ignorance. Or a question in the mode of passion, you know? Where's You know, where can I make a buck? Where's a good deal? You know, where can I get this cheap? And where can I sell it high? How can I increase my holdings? So he's passion. And the person in the mode of goodness asks more philosophical questions, asks questions, he's the scientist or the philosopher.
So if we are a so-called one of these philosophers, how concerned should we be with material knowledge if we're inquiring about spiritual knowledge at the same time?
Don't have to be very concerned about material knowledge. Sukadeva Goswami didn't feel that, well, I'm inquiring about Krishna, but what about nuclear physics? But whatever, or Parikshit Maharaj, I have 7 days to live, so let me hear as much as I can about Krishna, but also let me hear about current events and this and that. He just wanted to hear about Krishna, or anything in connection with Krishna. He was hearing about cosmology in connection with Krishna. He was hearing about Sankhya philosophy, analyzing the material elements, in connection with Krishna. He was hearing about history in connection with Krishna. So he was hearing about everything, but in connection with Krishna. The sages were asking, please tell us about this, if it's connected with Krishna. If it's not connected with Krishna, we're not interested. But if it's connected with Krishna, please continue. You're talking about Kali and how he entered and performed so many nefarious activities. You know, why were they interested in hearing about some criminal? But they said, if it's connected with Krishna, please go on talking about this.
Thank you very much.
In the Sri Upanishads, it is said that one should study nascience and like spiritual knowledge side by side. So does that mean you should study like the material knowledge and spiritual knowledge at the same time? Or can
Yeah, because you're already going to get into material knowledge. So practically you don't have to say, just like somebody's going to college. So I say, so side by side, you should study Krishna consciousness. Side by side, you should cultivate Krishna consciousness. Now, actually, he doesn't have to go to college. He's wasting his time in college. But since he's going to college, I say, well, go to college and chant Hare Krishna and study Krishna consciousness side by side. Or from another point of view, all right, we have to keep body and soul together, so we need some minimal material expertise, you know, how to plant, how to water it, how to grow. Something. Everybody needs to know some material thing. So, all right, carry on with that. But don't miss the real point, which is Krishna consciousness. That also.
Right.
You study Maya and study Krishna. Look at what Maya is. That's also there.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking that nishits means the pitfalls of material.
That's all right.
Okay.
Thank you. Mentioning about how the greater like transcendentalists, you know, like they don't need to follow the four regs, and talking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur and how he said he didn't have any taste for the holy name. I was thinking about, what about the Shishastakam? Like Lord Chaitanya, it seems like he's obviously, like, I mean, he's Krishna himself, but like, is he really in the position where he feels like,
yeah, he's
like
feeling
he
all
no
these
taste.
Things.
Well, I was thinking, is it like a wrong understanding that to have that those verses were written, he wrote them for everybody else to have something to like pray
no.
for and strive for?
No, Kaviraj Goswami, it's instruction. Shiksha ashtakas. Shiksha means instructive verses. But Kaviraj Goswami explains in the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita how these feelings were arising in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And out of his deep feelings, he's writing these verses. It wasn't just, okay, how can I, you know, sort of adopt the mood of a materialistic person and write something instructive? It came out of the deepest feeling.